Want to go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
And welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in. Episode 350 of the big show, some enforcer-based podcasting coming at you, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. How's everybody doing out there? Yes, the silly season is here. Santa's right around the corner. I took Thursday off and, I was going to do some Christmas shopping. Here we go, some Christmas shopping and, I went through two malls and a bunch of other stores and ended up buying like 1.5 total gifts. And I think I'm more lost now than when I started. And I'm running out of time. We got a week, right? So, right to the last minute every year. I always swear, you know, oh, I'm just going to buy a bunch of stuff on Amazon early on and I'll get it done. And that way I don't have to worry about anything. And now here we are on the 18th, you know, that last week before Christmas, it's the same all the time. So yeah, without fail, here we are. Just been a real, you know, and I apologize because I haven't done this. When was the last? Sunday, I guess, was my last Saturday. When the hell did I release it? Friday or something? Yeah, so it's been over a week. So I apologize for the delay. Yeah, it's just the time of year. Got a bunch of stuff going on. Transitioning into a new job. In a different department. My fill-in or the man who's replacing me starts tomorrow in my department. I have to train him. So that happens for, you know, a week and a little bit here, you know, and they got holidays and all that stuff. But, so that's going to happen here for hopefully I've heard good things about the guy. So I don't know him. I've never met him. But apparently he's all right. So that'll be all right. So, I'm not really gung-ho on training people, but, what can you do? But leave it better than when you found it, right? So, and then in the new year, I start my new department. So, and that's, you know, you're not going to lie, you know, you got anxiety and nerves because it's been 15 years at this job. So, we'll see what happens. It's a different position, supervisor position. So, obviously there's more, responsibility and that type of thing. So, and now you're supervising people, right? So, whereas before I was just like kind of on my own and, the one man band, right? And, it'll be different and, but I'm looking forward to the challenge and, we'll see how it goes. So, with that, my schedule changes. So I'm not sure in terms of the show, I mean, well, it's not like I'm working nights or anything, but I know my shifts are longer, but I will actually get days off. What are those? So I will have time off. So, my recording schedule might be a little altered. But we'll see. But like I said, I know the last little bit here, the show has been kind of sporadic. I know I always had my Wednesday, Sunday, you got to set your watch by it, but probably about the last 6 months, it's kind of changed a little bit. So just the amount of work has been ridiculous and, but anyway, hopefully get back in the groove here in terms of a regular, although I still think I've been pretty good, but I mean, like I said, last little while has been kind of hit and miss, but, but I haven't left you with weeks and weeks and weeks without anything. Although some might, hopefully I take weeks and weeks off. I take 2 weeks off, then quit. So we'll see how it goes here with the new schedule and stuff. They haven't even really told me my schedule. So, and I know they're changing the hours up and stuff. And so, yeah. We'll see how it goes. But, But looking forward to it. Anxiety, I'm nervous, and you know, but it's good. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, how are you guys doing? We're back at it here. I had a special guest today. Steve is back on the show, and it was interesting because Steve got a hold of me and said, you know, he'd been listening to some stuff, and he wanted to talk about Gordie Howe, and he had heard Joe and I talk about the myths of Gordie Howe and that type of thing. And Steve is a history major to begin with. We'll start there. But he is big hockey fights guy and was going back on newspapers.com and really dug in to, and he's from the Michigan area. So he really dug into Gordie Howe. Like, let's get to the bottom of this, right? Because there is, and I've been obviously talked about, like, there, I think, might have been some revisionist history and stuff like that, and some liberties taken with some facts. But Steve got to the bottom of it and did his research and he brings it to the podcast here, and I am suitably chastened. So, but no, it's great. And he kind of he wanted to come on and talk about his findings, and it's you know, from a hockey fight historian's point of view, it was great, and I loved it. I mean, I enjoyed you know, getting being in or learning some more information about it, and yeah, no, it's great. And I mean, and like always, right, the conversation kind of goes all over the place, so we end up talking about tons of people. But and we talked for a long time, about an hour and a half, I think. So, which I think was going to turn out to be like a half. It's like everything. Oh, it's, oh, we'll do about a half an hour. Oh, okay. You know, an hour and a half later, we're still going. No, it was great. And I want to thank Steve again for coming on. It was tremendous. And yeah, and like I said, anytime you can bring up the history and highlight that of the sport and the fighting aspect of the sport. And we make mention of it, in the interview when we're talking, but, you know, for all your Ryan Reeves and, you know, like, go back, your Proberts and your Twists and Berubis, you know, they stand on the shoulders of, you know, Kinderchuk and Joe Hall and Sprague Clegghorn and, you know, and Noel Picard and Bob Gassoff and all those guys. I mean, you can't have one without the other, right? And everything comes before them. And so I think history is really important. And yeah, so we delve into all of that this talk. So a lot of fun. But like I said, so, and Joe and I, or Steve and I talked for a long time. So I'm going to keep this intro. I actually had a bunch of stuff written out, but I'm going to keep it short. You know, other than, you know, basically I'll just talk, obviously I'm a member of the Hockey Podcast Network, 100 shows in the network. I'm on the original content side along with, Jolt and Joe Lazito. Oh, did you see that? Old Searson there from the UK brings his family over from Nottingham, comes across the pond, lands in New York, and oh, he ends up running into Lazito. I said, well, you took a wrong turn somewhere, because I don't know, you know, you didn't want to end up in that area. Holy, you know, I told him, when you got your picture taken, I mean, you know, you better sit on your wallet. Jesus, you know, you noticing all this plight, kids, you know, so... But no, he looked like they had a great time in New York. I've never been to New York. I'd like to go. But they looked like they had a great time. I know he's back home now. And it's his birthday today, actually. So happy birthday, John. I know he's been on this show a bunch of times and always been a real solid supporter of the show, which I appreciate. And over the years, John and I go back and forth yapping, and I always enjoy our conversation. So, But Joe Lazito of Coliseum Chronicles fame, yeah, so he's out hobnobbing. Instead of doing shows, Joe's out taking in the nightlife and disturbing people. So, but check out his back catalog, Coliseum Chronicles, Fakota, Asham, Ewan, Strudwick, on and on. I know he's working on a real big interview right now that for hardcore Enforcer fans, this guy's a minor league legend, and you guys are going to dig it, because I think it's his only interview he's done, so it'll be a good one. And then, of course, we got Alec over there at the Five for Fighting podcast. I know he's been, you know, kind of battling health issues and work issues and you know, just time, you know, the thing we're all fighting, time. And so he I know he's making efforts to you know, get more episodes out and that sort of thing. Speaking of, I mean, we're planning, he and I and Jay from Iowa. Look at this. I'm really selling this episode, this coming up episode. We are going to sit down tomorrow, hopefully, the three of us. And we are going to, it's going to kind of, instead of the State of the Union, it's going to be the State of the Miners. And where are we at the, basically, not the halfway, but the quarter pole mark in the Southern Pro League and the East Coast League. And, you know, just some general, who's surprising you and who's been letting you down and that type of thing. An eye on the Miners, if you will. So I hope you guys will tune in for that. But, yeah. And if you happen to be on the YouTubes, Fourth Line Voice on YouTube, I have over 2,000 videos. Subscribe to the channel, please. If you like what you see, hit the like button because that helps out in the algorithms. Same whatever, if you listen to my show, Joe's show, Alex's show, whatever podcast you listen to on whatever platform, iTunes or Spotify, hit the star rating. And again, that helps out us in the algorithms. And download, don't stream, please. That's how we get paid. As I always say, it's the little thing. It's a couple little minor things that you, the listeners, can do that greatly helps out a content creator. And those are a few of the things. So if you guys could do that, I would greatly appreciate it. And yeah, other than that, we should probably kind of probably get into this episode. I was going to talk about the, you know, the Larkin thing and all that. But it's kind of like, yeah. No, the only one I will talk about is... I guess I have to kind of mention this Jordan Kyrou interview where he starts crying. Wow. Now, you know, I'm not going to sit here and bang the desk and be a man, suck it up, man. No, but at the same time, well, for those that don't know, if you're listening, he plays for the St. Louis Blues, and of course, the St. Louis Blues earlier this week fired coach Craig Berube. Well, Berube and Kyrou, who is their highest paid player, apparently did not really see eye to eye this year and, you know, having some problems. And anyway, Berube gets fired, and later on that day, Kyrou kind of throws a shot. Somebody asks him about it, and he's like, oh, I have no comment. He's not my coach anymore. And you know, whatever. And it got taken out of, like, they were basically like, you know, he was pissing on the guy while he was down, right? So that night in St. Louis, every time basically that Kyrou was on the ice, they booed him. Yeah, you know, okay. Anyway, so after the game, they're interviewing him in the locker room and he starts crying. And it's been so hard and all this. And it's like, okay. So, of course, social media blows up. And of course, everybody, it's so great that, you know, men can cry and show their feeling and all this stuff. And you get that. And then you get the other ones, you know, oh, you're a bitch and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's very polarizing. You know, you get both sides of the argument. I just found the whole thing, you know, just kind of, what are you doing? Like, just, well, and then, so I kind of mentioned it on social media, because somebody said, well, they're booing him because of the comments about he made about Berube, and Berube was a loved coach by the fans and whatever. I'm like, well, maybe, or, I'm just spitballing here, but this is just me, maybe they're kind of giving it to him because he has signed an $8 million contract, and he's got 5 fucking goals this year. You know, and apparently does not go into corners, and his play has been fairly inconsistent and wishy-washy all year. This is not me saying this because I don't watch this shit, but I trusted St. Louis Blues ex-players who watch, and they commented on that, and that's what they were talking about. So I will trust their opinions over, you know, Blues fan 72 online. So not only do you have the highest paid guy and you only have 5 goals this year and, you know, you spray snow in the corners and, yeah, well, your shit play got Berube fired. I mean, it's a group effort, but I mean, when you're the highest paid guy and blah, 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 you know, you're the guy that they kind of look towards to maybe lead the crew here and you have 5 whole goals this year. So, you know, So, and then, to top it off, you shit play, then you decide to shit talk the guy on the way out the door. So, that's why you got booed. And then, to stand there and cry about it, So I kind of mentioned this on social media, and somebody said to me, like, well, how would you like to go to work and have people yell at you and call you shitty? I said, dude, I'm a government worker. I hear that daily. Are you talking? Are you kidding? I get told constantly how overpaid I am and useless and everything else from the public. And and management telling us we're not getting any money and everything else. I don't come home and cry and shed tears to my wife while I'm telling somebody down on Broadway yelled at me today that they pay my salary and I'm a sack of shit. Like, and old Cairo here. He's got a few more zeros on his paycheck than I do. So, if they want to, I take the slings and arrows for a fraction of what this cat makes. So, the thing that I found just ironic and funny about the whole thing is these people that are commenting online. Of course, it's all these Blues fans, these little Cairo fangirls and boys. He's human and people don't do, this is the problem with society and blah, blah, blah. Or I laugh because when you go on their social media feed and you start scrolling it, they shit talk every ref, umpire. They tweet at George Parros. You must have CTE, you dumb fuck. Nice suspend. Like you say, well, is it George human? Like we all make mistakes. This was your big thing, Gary Bettman's a piece of shit. Anybody disagrees with you, fuck you. And, but all of a sudden it's like, well, we should be sympathetic to our fellow man and his plight and everything else. But, unless that penalty goes against the Blues, then, we wish hateful shit on this person. Which I found just the hypocrisy of it all was eye rolling, but that's social media in a nutshell. But it's just the whole thing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know I get on this show, and for you, I've called the game soft and the players soft and everything else. That doesn't get much more. I don't even know what to say. Well, when a guy starts, and again, it wasn't like they were throwing batteries and empty or full beer cans at him or anything. Like they booed him. That was it. Like he didn't get hit with, car battery or anything. Like so, really, So there's that. I will say some breaking news that came out today from the Talking Trash podcast, which is AJ Galante and Daniel Amesbury's podcast that they have just started up. They're about five episodes in now. They had an announcement today AJ made. Of course, AJ was famous for Ice Wars, but he and Charlie Nama and a couple of the people created Ice Wars had a falling out and they separated, and Charlie and them took the name Ice Wars and went on with it. And of course had Ice Wars 3 in Wyoming, a few months back, which AJ and Amesbury were not a part of. But in the meantime, they have been behind the scenes, I guess, and putting plans together. And today they announced that, they're gonna bring it back and start their own hockey fight tournament again, or hockey fight pay-per-view type event. And it is called Major League Hockey Fights and, the MLHF. And, they did say it was going to be on ice, and, they are looking, they're already said, in the comments sections or get a hold of them on social media. If you want to take part and throw down, let them know. And if you have a city in mind, let them know. And they've got some backers, and in 2024, this is going to happen. So I'm really looking forward to that. And at the same time, if Ice Wars is going to continue, I'm going to support that as well. I mean, I have nothing against, I don't know what happened with AJ and Charlie and all that stuff, and it's none of my business and I'm staying out of it. If Ice Wars is going to continue, I will support that wholeheartedly as well as this. I mean, there's lots of different, competition out there. There's all, competition's always good. And if we're going to have two kind of companies doing this stuff, yeah, I'm a fight fan, man. I'm down with it. So that's all cool with me. But no, I'm glad AJ and Amesbury are back at it. And I wish them the best in this venture. And I told AJ a text. He sent me a text today and kind of said, oh, you better watch the podcast tonight. Or listen to the podcast today because there's something in there for you. Because he and I had been talking earlier a couple days ago about Ice Wars and stuff and how I had wished he was still involved, etc. So yeah, I was pumped with the event. So I got a hold of AJ. I got him back and just said, yeah, that's awesome, man. And you know, anything I can do to promote it my own little way, I will certainly do so. And I'm hoping to have AJ on the show here in the new year, and you know, he can shed some more light on it. So there you go for 2024. Major League Hockey Fights is coming. So looking forward to see what that brings. So other than that, guys, I was gonna talk about Gabranson and all that, and but you know, whatever. What more needs to be said? That is why you can't enforce it. That's why the players can't police the game anymore, and that's why there's no enforcers. So we'll leave it at that. But anyway, enough of my yap, and I've already gone for 20 minutes here. So how about we get into my conversation with Steve here? And like I said, it's a great history lesson, and I hope you guys enjoy it. And again, folks, with the holiday season and everything else, I'm really, you know, I know everyone's busy, so I don't know what's going to happen here in terms of in the next couple weeks. Like, I'll still do some shows. Obviously, I'm not going to just go radio silence for weeks and weeks, but there might be a little wrench thrown in here and there. But I will definitely be coming back, hopefully on Wednesday or Thursday here with Alec and Jay, and we'll talk about some minor league fights and everything. And then, you know, I've talked to a few players and stuff, and hopefully we can set something up here and, you know, for the next little bit. But I will make the promise in 2024 when I get the new job and the new schedule. And I will, and then, like I said, I will actually have days off and I won't be all over the place. Then we can get back to a normal functioning, regular rotations and schedule, and we'll get rolling with things. But, so bear with me in the meantime. But, nonetheless, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. As always, I know there's hundreds of podcasts to listen to, and like I always say, and I truly mean it. The fact that you chose to listen to this, I greatly appreciate it, and I'm humbled, and I really want to thank you. And if you're on social media, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, get a hold of me, Fourth Line Voice, and my DMs are open, as the kids say. Drop me a line. And if you're not on social media, hockeyfights@hotmail.com. Send me an email. I'd love to hear from you, good, bad, or otherwise. If you have a show idea, you want to come on the show, get a hold of me like Steve did, and here we are. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you guys. So, all right, let's get into this, folks. Thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you Wednesday.
And now, here's a word from our sponsor.
Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. It's Connor Bedard who's going to keep it up here in the new year as we head into the Christmas season. Connor McDavid and the Oilers are starting to heat up here at the quarter pole mark. We'll see what happens here in the new year. But download the app now and use code THPN. New customers get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023. All rights reserved.
And now back to your regularly scheduled program.
All right, here on the Fourth Line Voice, we have a returning guest. He, when I first had this gentleman on, he was on and he did the 10 rapid fire. And now he's back. Steve is on the line. Steve, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, thank you. Well, I was about to say, you actually got a hold of me on this one and said, hey, I want to come on and I want to talk about this Gordie Howe and this myth, or the myths around Gordie. And I mean, you know, we've kind of been talking about it here before we got going, but you've got some information. And like I said, I've to be completely honest, before I'll let you get going here, but I've actually been one of the guys that's been fairly critical of Gordie Howe over the years. And not that I was ever saying Gordie was the shits or anything like that.
No.
I said my gripe with, not so much with, obviously not with Gordie Howe, but with more of the fandom around him,
yes,
is anytime you mention Gordie, the only thing anybody can ever yell about is Fontenotto, and that's about it. It's like, well, it's kind of like similar to my issue with Robinson, Larry Robinson. Everybody just yells sure. about the Schultz
yeah.
fight,
yep.
and I'm like, okay. Yep. And I said, I've often said, I think people, and this is just me talking, this is just my opinion on it. I said, I think some people, it seems that superstar players or Hall of Fame players, I somehow think if their fighting ability gets greatly exaggerated because of how yeah. good of a player they are. Now, absolutely. I'm not, and again, I'm not saying they weren't tough. They certainly were. But it's like, right. oh, Bobby Orr, oh, he kicked out. Nobody wanted to fight him. Well,
right.
people that fought regularly right, were not right. afraid of Bobby Orr. Like, but it's like, right. for exactly. a Hall of Fame player, he would stick up yep. for himself, and that's all it is. But people build sure. this up like, oh, he was right up there with O'Reilly and Wincik, you know? And it's like, well, no.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Just a terror on the ice.
Yeah. And it's like, well, no.
We talked a little bit about that, in that there's almost some geographic or some regional specialties like that. Like, you know, Nick Fotu is a legend in New York. And then, like you said, Larry Robinson, Messier sort of gets that same treatment.
Yeah.
Messier is at the far end of the spectrum because outside of the aforementioned, I don't think Messier was really much of a fighter at
no,
all.
No.
But, yeah, so these guys, and you're right, the bone to pick is more with the, like Stan Jonathan, my man never lost a fight. You're like, well, actually, you know, he did. And you get tired of that, just that chorus of kind of uninformed people who don't know what's going on. So, yeah, I'm always curious when I hear people talk about the myth of Gordie Howe. And I think one of the things I was interested in coming on here was to talk about sort of the myth of Gordie Howe.
Yeah.
And you and I started to talk a little bit about that. And I went into this and was just telling you that one of the things that was great for me was I saw Bob Probert get knocked out by Todd Ewan in real time. Or get floored by Todd Ewan. I'm not even going to get into that whole mess. But, and it was kind of like I gave up this fantasy that nobody ever got knocked down or knocked out, like that there was some unbeatable person. So having said that, I've always kind of, you know, that on any given night, these guys can all have their moment. So I'm looking at these Gordie at Gordie Howe too, and I think he's fantastic. Like I'm always throwing his name in for GOAT. I think you could put up the reason why, and I think that there's that component that comes up where kind of uninformed people are like, well, plus he's the toughest guy ever, you know, the toughest guy ever. And you said, like you mentioned, Fontenotto gets thrown in quite a bit, and so that's one that always kind of comes. It never really seems to go beyond there. And so you and I were just talking about, you know, you can get online and take a look, and it's not hard to find places that sort of source out or talk a little bit about Gordie Howe. And especially there's one place in particular where you can look where they talk about Gordie Howe and, you know, was he a great player? Yes. Was he hockey's toughest player? No. He was tough? Yeah, but he was not hockey's top fighter. And this gentleman, and I'm not sure who it is who did the research, but he went through and he starts to talk about all 22 of Gordie's fights in his 2,500 games. And he lays them all out here. And it's a great resource. And it's where I started looking many years ago, too. And what I started, when I really started to look kind of more recently and dig in, there were some things that I thought were kind of flawed about this thing. And this is a list, I think, that we all, whenever I hear a criticism about Gordie Howe and the myth, you named a couple of them. One is that you just get tired of the pissing matches. You get tired of hearing about the guy never lost, Fontenotto, that sort of thing. And then you hear some of the same names kind of come up. Inzanicki got a hold of him, you know, that Larry Cahan got a hold of him, tossed him around, cut him. He bloodied him, you know, and that Fern Flammen also. Fern Flammen, who, you know, a legit badass. These guys, they're all legitimately tough. In an era of incredibly tough guys, these guys are all tough. So, you know, you read that, and I hear that. I often hear that. There's a few people online who just, that's like a chorus. I hear that every time I'll post something about Gordie Howe. I almost feel like I should also have a trigger warning that so these cats can throw in on their 10 cents and throw the same names in there. Well, you start to look, and you can, and, you know, there's a couple things about this list that just pop off to me kind of right away. And one is, you know, it was written in 2012. This list that we all kind of look at is like the Bible of Gordie Howe hockey fights is going on, you know, 11, 12 years old. In 2012, you didn't even really have access to box scores in the early 40s. Like, that wasn't even something that people had, that mainstream people had access to. So one of my issues was this, you know, Gordie Howe, here's all 22 of his fights. And people automatically say, well, you know, 22 fights, that's not even one a year. And admittedly, it's not. This is also in an era when the top fight getter, Fern Flam and some of these guys, they're getting 5 or 6 fights a year, 7 or 8 fights a year. It's not until Hextall and Vadna in the late 60s, early 70s, that anybody even officially breaks double digits in a single season for fights, you know. But so you hear that number two, only 22 fights. Well, one of the things that I think is fascinating as I kind of went back and looked is these guys – you're talking about an era, you know, from the late 40s, 1946, where the roster size is 14. So if you're taking a guy off the ice for 5 minutes in 1946, and you're going to have some legendary coach, whomever that is, from one of those original 6 franchises in your ear, you're taking that guy off the ice for 5 minutes. You and I know, anybody that looks at that era, I mean, the old joke used to be, you know, spearing is 2 minutes, but if you see it come out the other side, it's 5 minutes. You know, like that, yeah. That was the joke in the original 60s. Like, you had to literally kill somebody on the ice to get some kind of penalty like that. So what I started to find as I was looking, and you don't even have to look at Gordie Howe, you can find this in other times, like, you'd find fights where they'd go at it, but it would be quick, and they'd hit the ice. And now they're giving them 5 minutes. 70s or 80s are probably giving them 5 minutes. Not in 1946, not in 1950. You know, and you can also, there's also places where you can look and they'll say, like, if it's a quick fight, if this guy gets knocked out, these refs aren't looking to embarrass anybody. Like, hey, take your 2 minutes in the box and come back out and do it again, whatever it is. Nobody's sitting in the box for 5 minutes after getting one punched out. You know, they're just not. So I think you got to take a couple things of grain of salt. Like, this list is compiled 11, 12 years ago. You don't have access to box scores. There's all sorts of stuff. You know, Gordie's dad is talking about how they're listening to him on the radio and he gets in fights in his first 10 games. Well, that's a little bit more, that's mythology. You know, it's not really happening. But I'm sure he's out there roughing it up because he's breaking ankles in front of the net on defense. He doesn't want to go back to Florida, Saskatchewan, you know, and he's a teenager. But I think, you know, you can't just say, like, he only had 22 fights, because you can look and you can find references where there were fights, where he did have more fights. And so they're not noteworthy, but he did. And I think the next thing is, like, the Fontanato fight. And, yeah, that's legit. I think there's two things that I think are kind of problematic with that. And one is that this diminishes the reputation of Lou Fontanato, who was a really rugged defenseman. And really, I mean, he was setting penalty minute records, and he was legit. He was fighting the Flamins. He held his own against Rocket Richard. Like, he was doing well against the legit tough guys of that era. He was not a joke. So I think when we act like, you know, there's like, well, Gordie Howe beat up this guy from New York, you know, like, this wasn't just some scrub from New York. This was like one of the guys from his era who was a legitimate badass on that team. And it's a drubbing. And I think of it, the player that I think that he's most similar to, Gordie's most similar to, is someone like Clark Gillies. Like, you know, were the real fighters of that era afraid of Clark Gillies? No, but they didn't necessarily, nobody was half-stepping. Nobody was going to him on a shits and giggles mission. And when Hospodar, you know, took it too far, he got his face busted. And I think, like, there's similarities to that. The other thing is that, like, you know, Gordie Howe, it knocked out Rocket Richard. Rocket Richard, in his autobiography, is like, the only guy that ever bested me in a fight is Gordie Howe. Rocket Richard knocked people out. He knocked out Fernie Flamin. He was knocking people out. He was no joke. And I'm not talking like the way Maple Leafs fans give Wendell Clark. I'm not talking like he had 87 TKOs. Like, no, I mean, he was putting guys on the ice. He was knocking Bill Judd on the ice, you know? So You know, that's like the legit fight. And you go back and you look at these things, and you look at, like, Larry Kahane. So I go to the newspaper that day, and you can find these newspapers now. And they talk about, like, well, Kahane comes in and belts him with a high stick and bloodies him. They get into it. They exchange body shots. It's a good fight. You know, but that's not what our man says. Our man gives us some line about, like, you know, they get into it, and Kahane, you know, punches him around or bloodies him or whatever it was. I had it here somewhere, but yeah, Goody took the worst of it. Kahane was clearly upset. They both were said to land big blows. What I found as I went through here is, like, a lot of this stuff is just inaccurate. You know, a lot of this stuff just isn't true, and nobody calls this guy out on it. So I have a degree in history, Darren, which I always said, like, lets me work at the register at McDonald's. I don't have to start off at Fry's. It's like, big whoop, but I like to dig in. I like to research, and this stuff is there now. Like, you know, there's some people out there in the vanguard of, like, box scores and looking at newspapers that I'm just blown away by. And there's a couple of them who I think if you were to ask them, like, this myth of Gordie Howe, like, and I think one in particular would say, like, you know, he's actually probably a better fighter than many of us give him credit for, because I think we're in the period right now where there is that blowback where people are like, you know, hey, he only had two fights. Why does he have the Gordie? He only had two hat tricks. Why is it the Gordie Howe hat trick? Well, you know, he only had 22 fights. Why do we even? He's obviously not a fighter. And I think people are looking at it in sort of the wrong way. But I think that's the, like, you know, fan is short for fanatic. We got people all over who are blinded by their fanaticism and can't, you know, they don't want to see sort of the reality of what it is. You know, I look at, like, I'm looking at this one on February of 65, where he's fighting Noel Picard. He said, the rookie Picard appeared to get the better of the older Howe when he pulled his jersey over his head and landed two good punches. He then landed Howe up, and Gordie surprised him with two solid rights. And it's like, yeah, that's sort of what it is, except, you know, you can look at the St. Louis Dispatch, you can look at these things, and he wrestles the sweater over his head, but he's not landing any punches. And I think the danger of anything like mythologizing like that is, like, if there's only one point of view or if there's only one reference, then we're all really limited. And I just, you know, I encourage people to get out there and do their own research on Gordie. But when I get in there and look, like, he's a better fighter than I would have given him credit for. Like, I don't really find any real instances. I certainly don't find any real instances of him getting his hat handed to him. You know, maybe when he was younger, and it wouldn't have been a big deal, it wouldn't even made the news, maybe. But from what I can see in about the 30-some fights that I've found, he's always competitive at best, you know. And a couple of days ago was the anniversary, or at worst, a couple of days ago was the anniversary of him fighting with Fred Shero from 1949, 74 years ago. And Stan Fischler said, you know, there's only Fred Shero and Jack Tex Evans are the only two people that I ever saw fight Gordie Howe to a draw. So, you know, again, I'm not buying into the myth that he never lost, or that he absurdly would never think he was unbeatable. It's just hard to find. It's hard to find any instances where it is. Now, again, I think of, like, somebody like Clark Gillies. I almost dare to start the fire by saying, like, a young Scott Stevens, but again, that one should come with a trigger warning. People flip out about him.
Steve said it. I didn't say it. Steve said it. Yeah. Send your cards and letters. I'll give you his email. Yeah.
Right. Thanks, right.
Yeah. I don't want, you don't get that on me.
That? Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. You know, what's funny is, like, I am admittedly a huge Gordie Howe fan. I just think he's great. I hated Scott Stevens as a player. I hated him. I hated him on the Caps. I hated him when he killed my Red Wings. I hated him. So after all these years, when I'm on these boards, like, man, the guy could fight, you know, and you're like, no, and you just get tired of the overwhelming, like, well, he ducked, don't me, like, okay, whatever. So you go back to, I think the guy who's probably most similar to Gordie is somebody like Clark Gillies, in that, you know, he's big, he's strong, he could hurt you if you weren't prepared, or however it went, he could hurt you in there. I mean, there's a good quote by Butch Bouchard, who was one of the great enforcers of his time, and he said, you know, like, those guys that fought in that era, they weren't afraid of Gordie. He said, but we always knew where he was, and we always were aware of him, and we were aware of how strong he was, you know. And I think you go back to that other lifelong kissing, that's right. I don't believe anybody in that era is afraid of anybody else. Are there guys that you don't want to tangle with more than others? For sure. And I think, you know, the other thing is that in that time, those guys were, you were just as likely to get a 6 or 8 inch cut on your forehead from a stick as you were to have somebody drop your gloves. Like those guys, they were using the lumber just as quick as dropping the gloves. And there was no, I see guys on there and they say, like, you know, what about the code? So there's no, there wasn't a code in, there wasn't a code in 1980, let alone 1950. So, you know, I mean, those guys, he didn't want to go back to Floral, Saskatchewan. Those guys didn't want to go back to Kirkland, yeah. Ontario. They were, if it took running a stick through your mouth to keep from going back to wherever, so be it, man. Better you than them.
Well, and like, and like you said, I mean, back then when it was the original six, those guys didn't have the luxury of being scared. It was like,
no kidding. You'd be out of the league.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I mean, the roster is 15 to 17, so you have less than 100 NHL guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about all those guys like Teddy Harris and Terry Harper that just played for years in Cleveland, in the minors, and all the guys out on playing Western hockey, you know, and man, they could have probably had another 3 or 4 teams just from the talent that was available for sure. And some of those guys just spent a lifetime in the minors.
Well, that's like Don Cherry. Don Cherry played 15 years in the minors, right? And he talks about it all the time. He played one game. He got one, oddly enough, his one game in the NHL is a playoff game, which is kind of wild, but it's like,
it is wild.
They'd call him up for the playoffs, but it's like, if they probably had any more than six teams, he probably would have made the NHL for a little while, but it's like him and a lot of guys, right? So it's like,
Well, I just found this fascinating article about Cherry where he was fighting, had this nemesis in the minors. And you know, like they're all farm clubs or somebody. They're all, you know, he's on somebody's farm club and he's playing Montreal's farm club, and they have a couple of bench clearing brawls. And I think is it Selke? Whoever, one of the Montreal coaches, he keeps his team on the bench. Well, Cherry sends his boys over the board. You know, it's in March of 62, and he goes over the board and he ends up getting into it with Bob Armstrong. Well, years later, like the Canadians kind of remember him from that event, and whoever the brass was at the time, I'm drawing a blank because I don't really like the Canadians, but they're like, you know, I remember him from the minors, and he's not necessarily the type of guy we want. Like, if those guys wanted to, if the brass wanted to, they could stick you someplace for years, and there was nothing you could do. And so many of those guys, you know, they may have had a high school education. Maybe there wasn't a whole lot else to fall back on. You look at a guy like Brophy. I mean, that guy played forever in the minors.
Yeah.
You know, like they just didn't. And again, you weren't taking food off of his plate. Like those guys they'd slice you from head to toe, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, just to kind of circle it back with Gordy, like, nobody's unbeatable. I think you go into it with that kind of mindset and you kind of just kind of phase out or block out the 90% of idiots out there who, it's, you know, they don't want to put the work in, and it's easier to just kind of say, oh, so-and-so never got beat, or so-and-so, you know, it was unbeatable. And you know, I think what I'm finding when I'm looking is like, man, this guy was legitimately tough. Like, is the fight with Fontanato overplayed? Yeah, for sure. It is. But I feel the same way about the Bouchard-Jonathan fight. And I think, like, you know what? Bouchard hadn't fought in almost a year. And before that, it was his last fight with Keith Magnuson. This is like Jonathan's third fight in 2 weeks. So, yeah, I get it. But I'm not going to act like I'm surprised that he got hammered. Like, yeah, I mean, Bouchard's best days as a fighter were behind him. So, again, like, I'm not trying to pee on that parade. But there are all these sort of, you know, these hockey, not myths, but these legends that we prop up and that people have just, you know, they just kind of keep them up because it's easier than doing the work. And that's fine, man. That's the great thing about being a fan, you know?
Yeah, well, the Bouchard-Jonathan thing, that fight was actually even until Jonathan switches hands at the end. It's not like everybody talks like this is just some ass-kicking from the gloves dropping to the end, right?
Massive
it's like,
bloodletting.
Yeah, it's like,
no,
like,
it's a good fight.
Yeah, until he breaks his nose with the left at the end. Yeah, and then they go down. This absolute destruction of Bouchard, it's like, well, not really.
Yeah.
Like I had one guy the other night, we were sitting there talking, and he's just like, so I had put up a picture of Bouchard throwing a body check or something, and immediately, of course, the Jonathan stuff comes up, and he's like, oh, well, this...
But do that, yeah.
Well, yeah, and then the one guy, of course, goes, oh, this guy will just... The only thing he's ever known for is getting beat up by Stan Jonathan. And I was just like, of course, I go and look. The guy's from Boston, so I was like you said, right?
The only thing they had to hang their hat on for like 30 years in that rivalry was that was the only thing. It was like one time one of your guys beat up our guys on our way to another Stanley Cup victory. You know, Jonathan was fine. He was talking the next day about, I'm sorry, Bishai was fine. He's like, I don't know what the big deal is. He's like, it's not the first time I've had this big nose, you know, blood eating. And he's like, you don't know what to do. And yeah, I mean, the myth around that, like, you know, he never played again. Yeah, he did.
Well, yeah, and it's like, and I think what happened is, of course, it's on Hockey Night in Canada, so it's like that. Yes. It went across Canada. Mm-hmm. The visual of it, the theater of it, because it did look blood everywhere. It looked like a murder scene for sure.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, it was a broken nose, which happens constantly. And I said to the guy, I'm like, well, Bouchard played like 700 career games, has 5 Stanley Cups. I'm pretty sure he's not too concerned about the Stan Jonathan fight as much as you are, you know, like.
I've said that before too. Like, he can't hear you because of the 5 rings in his ears.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is like, you know, he and his dad are the first father-son duo in Hab history to win the Cup together. Again, I'm not a Hab fan, but when you're the first to do anything in a franchise like that, like, that's what you're going to be, like, that's where your pride is going to come from. What, he's going to walk around a hat in hand in Boston and hope, like, hey, can I sign one of those pictures to make some money? Why would he even leave Quebec?
Yeah.
but I mean, you know, the other thing too, like you said, like, you got Wensink challenging the Stars bench and that gets high profile. There's probably 5 guys challenging benches that year. You know, you got to do it challenging benches. You got people, but that, because that's high profile, it's like, well, that guy's right out of Slapshot, you know, and yeah, he is. He's one of the handful of guys that I would not turn my back on in any sort of brawl. Like, that Wensink was, he was a bad man. Like, he hurt people, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, those kind of legends that get woven into the mythology of the game, and then, you know, people get tired of them. You get that blowback, and people get tired of talking about Gordy and Lou. And there's no video. You know, there's just no video.
Yeah.
So it's even harder when there's no video, and you got to kind of put it up. And you know, I read these newspaper accounts, and I take them with a grain of salt, because these guys are riding on the trains with the players, and these guys are getting, you know, some of them are catching checks from the club, so they're not going to be
okay. All right, I'm going to cut you off here, because this is where I got a couple questions for you here, or a couple, you know, and, I was going to say, like you said, the problem with the house stuff is there's no video. So I said, that hurts. I said, the worst thing Fontenot ever did was let Life magazine take a picture of him in the hospital.
Oh my God.
That was stupidest thing he ever did. Because all it was again, a broken nose. But they, you take a picture of him, holy shit, it looks like he was out for months, and it was like, well, no, it was a broken nose. I mean,
hey, Darren, imagine there's no video of Wendell Clark and Marty McSorley, but all we get the next day is the picture in the paper with Marty with that shiner, and you're going to be like, oh, okay, Darren, you know, sure he won.
Well, that was, see, that's, and I was going to say, that's a perfect example. After that fight, when Marty's leaving the ice, and he kind of knocks the camera down because he's bleeding.
Yeah.
Oh, see? And it's like, you do realize if you watch that fight, and I love Wendell. I love me Wendell. I love both guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, Marty landed about 35 more punches than Wendell did in that fight. But Wendell landed the best one, right? So, of course, it's exactly.
Yeah. Well,
it's the theater of it, right?
People start propping it up. Yeah, exactly. And I've said it before myself, just from the fight with everybody else. Like, the winner always covers the camera on his way off the ice, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and there was McLaren Parker, Scott Parker, Steve McLaren.
Yeah,
that was the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, Parker literally put him out for weeks with a fractured nose, and like, he had to get constructive surgery. But it's like, well, yeah, but McLaren out punched him. I'm like, well, okay, if that's how you need to get a win, I'll take the loss every night. Because Parker kept playing. McLaren missed like 6 weeks. So it's like,
Yeah, no kidding.
But to get back to Fontenot, right? So the stupidest thing Lou did was that pitcher. But anyway, I was going to ask you, as you go through newspapers.com, I see awesome. I should have got the other Steve on here too, when Probert was king.com.
He's the Vanguard, man. He's the one that I was mentioning earlier. He's an inspiration. He's the one that found all this stuff. And he came into this, I could tell by some of his posts and how he was approaching it, that he was coming into this like, this dude's overrated. I don't see that so much in what he says. And again, that's his show for you. But I think if you were to ask him, I suspect he would say he's a better fighter than he might get credit for.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the great thing when I had Steve on, when Probert was king.com, for those wondering,
yes.
When I had him on, I don't even know what, I'm not even going to try to guess what episode, many episodes ago. Steve, of course, went with the newspapers.com and everything into researching. He went right back to the beginning of the NHL, like the 1900s, and it was like, 1890s and stuff. So he's talking about like Joe Hall and all those guys, right?
Oh,
and
man.
Like Sprague Claghorn. And he was, he had a ton of stuff. He had some great, he had some great insights on the episode with talking about those guys.
You know? I feel like in that regard, he is again ahead by a century. Like he is so far ahead. And honestly, I mean, it's not my area of interest. But I love what he posts, and I love to read about it. You know, and again, like man, that guy, again, I have a great appreciation for how he's going about doing things for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's the thing, and that's why I always try to tell these other guys. It's like even when I did the episode, I think in the intro to that episode when I was talking, I said a lot of even younger fans are, we're all younger than Sprague Claghorn, but I mean, you know, but everybody, we always like, oh, Berube, Probert, Twist, you know, that's kind of what everybody talks about. I'm like, well, there is no Berube, Twist, or Probert without Sprague Claghorn and Bad Joe Hall.
It's
and
a
all
procession. The, it's a, you know, yeah.
Yeah, they stand on the shoulders of those guys, right? Like, and same thing as we go on with Gordie Howe, Vern Flamin, these guys, it's like, Ted Harris and stuff like that. It's like, well, you can look back on them and say, well, oh, they get destroyed by Bogard. Well, okay, it's like, it's evolution, man. Of course, you know, like I always say, my SUV ran a lot better than my 78 Nova did, but I mean, you know, come on now. We got to look at, you have to look at things with through a vacuum when you're looking at eras, right?
Cause it's totally. And with hockey, it's even more challenging like that. I mean, there's just like, it just blew up. I mean, you have your like Red Horner for all these years, you know, lead the league in penalty minutes. And then you got your early 60s and then there's that small window between where like Ferguson's retiring and Kurtenbach is kind of, his injuries are catching up, and you got your Teddy Harris's and you got Wayne Cashman, and there's this moment where Keith Magnuson, he pops out of nowhere, and because he's just a maniac on the ice, like that guy's dangerous. Like he's getting in fights and swinging from his heels, and if you don't know what to expect, like he's catching some guy. You know, he took out Earl Heskala, and Heskala was a respected policeman. The thing was, like, there were no policemen in that window because the super nuclear age hadn't really shown up. And then when you get these guys like Howitt that are fighting 25, 30 times a year, like, I mean, those are team totals sometimes, you know, and it's also, it's just different. It's a different area. It's a different, and I really have a hard time kind of separating guys. And I hate to kind of do my, like, I hate to do it because it sounds like disrespectful in my own mind, but I'm like, can Bogard take a shift in 1970? Can he take one in 1950? I mean, what are we doing? Are we having like just guys that sit on the bench and like come out and fight? Or are we playing a hockey game and then there is a fight? Because, you know, like, is the guy that plays 20-some minutes a game, is he the same as the guy that gets a 45-second shift? And again, I have nothing but respect for those guys, so I'm not trying to dog them. But when I'm thinking in my mind, like, where do these guys fuss out? I mean, are we playing a game or are we just doing, you know, rock 'em, sock 'em? You know, like, what are the parameters here?
Well, yeah, and I mean, and there is that, well, and that, like, as you said, right, as the eras changed, everything, the mindset changed, and, you know, and how they looked at it, and like you said, towards the end, it became, when you get the McIntyres and Bogards, and it became nuclear weapons, right, and Colt Miller and stuff
that. Yeah, for sure.
You know, and it was like, you know, so, and then before that, even in the 80s and stuff like that, those guys still had to play. Yeah. You had to play, and then, you know, and I think, and even in the 70s, I mean, Schultz is obviously kind of looked at as, oh, the Hammer, the King of the Goons, whatever you want to call him. Well, he had a 20-goal year.
Yeah.
He wasn't the three-minute dummy. And I think sometimes people, younger fans kind of view him as like a McIntyre. No disrespect to Steve McIntyre or anything, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For this idea.
Right. No disrespect to any of those guys.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you got to take a regular shift, and then they're doing it in the playoffs, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was reading in Dennis Potvin's autobiography, and it's called, I think, Power on Ice, and he talked about his first game against the Flyers and how much Schultz was in his head. And we're talking about Dennis Potvin. I mean, this guy is like, he's not lacking for confidence. You know, but he talked about, like, man, I'm looking over my shoulder all the time. And that's what I always say about Schultz. And that's why I always say, like, you know what? I'd take him over George Laroque, because I want people looking over their shoulder for my guy, not my guy coming up and asking you for a fight and then you politely declining and my guy saying, okay, cheerio, have a good day, whatever.
Schultz wasn't asking, you know.
No, and none of those guys were. There's a lot. It's not hard to find pictures or even to read about guys. Like, they suckered people in brawls all the time. If your head was on a swivel and you were out there, I mean, I posted that photo a while ago of Ted Harris, and he's just whining up to Colcock Bobby Orr, you know, and Orr's glove is dropped. And that's the problem with pictures. I think he Orr reacted and he didn't get knocked out. He didn't get dropped. But I mean, you see Ted Harris like, oh, hey, here's his welcome to the NHL moment.
Yeah.
Welcome to the National League, Bobby. You know, and you can, I mean, I read about Barclay Plager doing that. When these brawls are coming up, if you're not paying attention, these guys think nothing about cold cocking you.
Well, yeah. And I think, and that's the one thing that I've ranted on this show hundreds of times about it, but and again, I think people try to put this, I keep saying younger fans. It's not just younger fans, but these people that have this idea of the code in their head.
Yes.
And so they just look at, like you said, if they go back to the 70s or whatever, and Semenko or any guys like that, it's like, or even Dave Brown and stuff, and it's like, well, they just jump people. They just sucker punch people. And it's like, well, no, what they were doing was enforcing, which is exactly what they were paid to do.
Exactly.
It's like, there was none of this, like, hey, bro, do you want to have a tussle? Like, you know,
exactly.
It's like, no.
Right. And there's no butt tapping afterwards. No. And I'll see you on the golf course, and your ex-girlfriend is my current girlfriend.
Things, yeah.
Like, and see you at the MGM.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and I think people, they often, for like, well, they don't understand. I've said this a bunch of times. Yeah. I've even said on the forum a bunch of times. I said, people truly do not understand what the enforcer is, because it's so far gone now and so far.
Right.
Even in the last, like I said, I've said it on the show. I said, players don't know what enforcing is.
No. I don't even blame these guys because they didn't grow up. I mean, you know, when you think about, like, okay, so who's the last, if you're a current player, who's the last enforcer you probably saw? And I haven't followed the game in years, but I'm thinking Sean Thornton, you know, he's the last one that I kind of thought, and I thought he did it. Yeah. Well, first off, the enforcer, as you and I envision him, couldn't exist today. It just couldn't exist. I mean, because the enforcer that you and I think of, like, I like Joey Kosha. I'm a big Wings fan, you know. But I'm like, man, if you didn't know Dave Semenko was coming for you that game after you just dropped John Jackson, like, that's on you, dude. So, like, I never have been like, well, you know, Semenko should have given him the warning. No, Kosher's head should have been on a swivel, and he should have had that stick out like a bayonet, or he should have been ready to go. You know, like, no, like I said, my Mount Rushmore of enforcers are guys that had the other team looking over their shoulder. I don't care if you're the world's greatest fighter. Like, I'm not a huge Nick Foti fan, you know, and part of that is, like, I don't need the showmanship. Get in there and do it.
Yeah. Know? Well, there's a difference between enforcing and fighting.
Yes.
And absolutely. I think some people can't make the distinction. It's like, oh, no, there's...
Yeah.
Like I said, when it came down to fighting, McSorley was probably a better fighter than Semenko was. But it was like,
yeah, probably.
I would say Semenko was probably. Well, now that I take that back, I might not even say.
You know, it's a totally different fight. The longer it goes, the better it is for Marty.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Semenko right out of the hop is going to throw huge bombs, but then those however many packs a day is going to catch up pretty quick.
Yeah, but it's like both those guys were not going to. Like, that was the thing. It was, there was no code. There was none of this. Like you said, the thing with Koser. Well, it was it. I always say with this, I said, this, it didn't just fall out of the sky.
No.
Like, Semenko wasn't sitting on the bed, boy, I better get a quick jump on him, because Joey's got that big right. No, it had nothing to do with fighting Koser until Koser, like you said, beat up Don Jackson and set that met. And then it was like, all right, well, I got to get the momentum back for our team here. And that's why Semenko did what he did.
he tells Marty in like 83 when Marty comes over from Pittsburgh, he says, you know, sometimes we got to remind them. Sometimes we must remind them, you know,
it is
only like Siminko can do. He says over in the gravelly voice, Marty, sometimes we got to remind them. And then he probably went out and, you know, threw Paul Baxter's head into the stands or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people don't understand that. They look at this. No. Well, you have to have a square off. And
right,
it's, you know,
right.
And it's like,
Marcus of Queensbury.
Yeah. And it's like, well, that's a very, right. Like I always say that, that's a really, I think people get this like romantic look at fighting sometimes. And it's like, you don't really understand what it really is. Like, it's become such a, for lack of a better term, I was saying it the other day, it's become a sideshow.
Yeah, yep, I agree.
You know, and I don't have a problem with that. I mean, like I said, I'm an LNH guy. I don't like that shit. I don't care. But at the same time, let's not confuse the two. And exactly. I think people do. And I think especially the younger, they look like you always, Probert and Rob Ray get all this shit. Oh, they weren't tied down. So they really weren't that, Probert really wasn't that good.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there was no rule against it.
Right.
And you keep talking like the other people in the league weren't allowed to do it. They were allowed to do it too, you know. Like,
well, you know what's fascinating? Because again, I watched that in real time, and I'll bet you, Darren, if you go back there and you watch whatever the first 20 Probert fights, I wouldn't even hazard a guess, but say the sweater comes up in half of those, I'll bet you in every one of those fights, Mickey, whomever it is, says like, "Oh, this bad news." We all grew up thinking like that the sweater came up, that was only a step away from getting it over your head, and then you're just going to get pummeled, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, there weren't a lot of people. To me, It looks like Cochran is like the earliest shedder, you know, in my mind. I mean, he looks like he's the earliest guy to just be like, fuck this, I'm out of it, and just get out and swing like a madman. I think Butch Bouchard did a little of getting out of the sweater, too. He did the first of pulling the sweater over the guy's head. But, I mean, yeah, at the same time, like back then, it was 50-50. Fans are looking at that like, is that a good thing that Probert's coming out of the sweater? Is it a bad thing?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I'm a huge Probert fan, but it's like, for me, Ray is like, that's silly, you know?
Yeah.
And if it's the other way around, I'm probably like, what? It's no different. It's all on the same spectrum. But in my mind, like, I mean, Nyland talks about it all the time. He's like, you've got to fight Dave Brown in that brawl. And Brownie's got nothing for him to hold on to.
Yeah.
Like, it's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. But again, like you said, everybody else could have done the same thing. They all could have done the same thing. And everybody, Brett's not on there very often anymore, but Brett Tover used to post all those sweaters that were altered. And the guy that does, like, the minor league thing, the drop your gloves minor league thing, like that guy's got, like all these guys are cutting their sleeves. I got a clipping that I should share with you where Dave Brown wears three different sweaters one game, like three different jerseys, like not three different, like three different numbers, like he's number 21, number 19, and like 35. And because every jersey's something he's altered in the game, it gets like thrown out, you know what I mean? And it was like, yeah, so... Right, is Dave Brown, do we take points off of Dave Brown because he shortened the length of his sleeve? Or do we just say, like, man, that's gamesmanship? And you know what the Raiders said on the way out the door, like, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Number two, see number one. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the other thing, too, that people just can't understand is, like, you're taking food off people's table. Like, if you're, if you get beat once, I mean, John Hillworth, like, look at that guy. Like, he's a bad dude. He's fighting all these guys in the minors. He's doing great. He comes up and he just gets manhandled by Ben Wilson, who's doing that. But his general manager is Terrible Ted, and Terrible Ted thinks he's got to go out and either ram his stick down his throat or whatever. You know, Hillworth in the locker room, like he ran a 100-yard dash in a 90-yard gym.
Yeah.
And it's like, nah, Ted, like in this generation, we don't send guys back out into the, like, I've got a whole set of pictures that I thought have been like, would be funny concussion protocols, like, you know, Western Hockey League in the 70s, and they're just pulling guys off the ice like they're drunks out of a bar.
Yeah.
You know, like skates are dragging behind them and everything. People have no idea how violent it was because the game was so regional and just not televised. And, you know, when it started to grow and get bigger and Gary wanted to attract the soccer moms, like, you just couldn't have that. You couldn't have guys breaking sticks over other guys' heads. You couldn't have them jumping into the penalty box.
you know?
Like, it just wasn't going to sell the way he wanted to. And eventually, like, it just became like it wasn't part of the, like, you know, I think where fighting is now, to me, it looks like where it was in the original 60s. Like, it's all kind of a spectrum. Like, you know, there just weren't massive amounts of fights like that. Like, you're looking at, I don't remember, but I fought a couple years ago, it looked like Evander Kane led the league maybe a couple years in a row with like 150 penalty minutes. And I'm like, man, you know, Glenn Cochran had that by 15, 18 games.
Yeah. Well, and I used to lose. Yeah, and I think what you're seeing nowadays is a lot of the fights now are front wall. Of course, it's a big hit, they have to fight. Well, not really, but these fights are happening through creation, through something happening. There's not really appointment fighting anymore. Like, there's still, now and again, I'm sure there is, but I mean, for the most part, it's not like, oh, Reeves is out, Delorier's out, okay, now we have to fight. It's, well, sometimes it
is. Right.
But you know what I mean? It's like, it's more like, we'll fight because
there's a chance that those guys don't fight.
Yeah.
There's gotta be something that happens on the ice.
Yeah.
For those guys to step into what they're gonna do. They just aren't gonna do it just to do it the way our guys did. And yeah, that's for somebody else to debate whether it's better or worse, but it's just, that's the nature of the game. Like, they're not just stepping on the ice and throwing them before they drop the puck.
Well, and I think now, and I think probably with a lot of guys, you're going to find like a Ross. Yeah. Like, a team might have 15 fights total, but you might have one guy that's got five, but then there'll be there'll be 10 guys with one because it's like, well, because everything, there is no enforcer anymore. Like, I think that's what happened back in the 80s and 90s, especially. It was like, well, when the Stars got hit, well, yeah, so if, like, now if the Stars get hit, they kind of have to fight themselves, more or less. They'll do their own kind of fighting. And, I mean, it ain't much of a fight. It's a game of slap and tickle. Because the other guy that he's kind of fighting really doesn't fight either. So it's like, you know, whatever. Whereas before, it was like he'd come back to the bench and, like, Stu Grimson would be like, I got it. You know, whatever. And then they would go out. Yeah. Well, and I always laugh. And when you actually look at it, when you really break it down, kind of the stupidity of it, really. You know, I always said, like, A hits B, so then C goes out and fights D.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I always think, and this is another one of those myth-busting things, and this is one that I would just catch nothing but shit for, but I've never seen a hockey player deterred by another hockey player's actions. You know, like, I heard, like, oh, man, that guy's so lucky he didn't play in the 80s. Like, do you know who Paul Baxter was? Like, do you know who Ken Linsenman was? Like, that dude would have never survived. Like, there have been rats in the game forever, and I've never seen one of their behaviors deterred because of a potential ass kicking. I've never seen it. You know, did Sean Avery stop being a punk, you know, or whatever he was in Detroit after he was getting lessons from these Hall of Famers? No, he went out and did his thing. You know, I'm reluctant to buy into that. The other one that I don't believe is true either is, like, well, if you take fighting out, you're going to get a lot more stick work. Like, this game has, stick work has always been in the fabric of this game. And it's been there whether you've got guys that have 30 fights a year or whether you got guys that have 5 fights a year. There's always stick work, you know. Is it worse in Europe? I don't know. I'm not over in Europe. I have no idea. But I just don't think of either of those things you can honestly say. Like, well, fighting's a deterrent to that. No, fighting is an outlet, and fighting has its place, but it's not a deterrent. You know, like, I don't think.
Oh, it's definitely, there's definitely an outlet. I mean, you know, because you look at, like, I mean, I've had guys on this show that did both. Well, my brother did both, played junior and played college. And he was like, well, college was completely dirtier because you can't fight. That's true, but they're also wearing full cages. So it's you know, so that becomes, like, that'd be interesting. See, because up here in Canada, our university hockey, they wear half visors. But there's still,
I can't believe that it's not bigger in Canada. Like, I went to school in North Dakota, and I was like, I was blown away because I was like, man, hockey here is like football at the University of Michigan, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I had Mike Commodore as a classmate, but I also had gone, because I'm a lifelong student there, I had, like, Dean Jackson, Dixon Ward. I was friends with Greg Johnson. Like, those guys were so accessible and so nice back then. I mean, you had a campus of 10,000 people, but I'll tell you what, man, when the Red River Valley, when the war with Minnesota came on, I still watch college hockey because it's the only hockey that I see that actually has that vitriol and hate. You know, where they actually hate each other, you know. And I'm not pretending like there's heavyweights coming out of there. But, you know, there were big brawls. There were fights. And I think you're right. I absolutely. Well, I mean, you can look back and see research and look back in the 80s. Like, the helmets coming along, and you got guys that are like, you know what? I'd run that guy. I might not run him if he didn't have a helmet, but if I look over and that guy has got a helmet on, he's like, yeah, I might give him a stick. I might put a shoulder in him. They all to a person were like, this is a dangerous slope. When you start gearing people up and protecting them to the point that they can't be hurt, like, then you're going to have these buzzsaws all over the ice that aren't worried about anything. And I think you and I saw, like, there was a decade that when you in the 70s and 80s when I started really getting into it, stretchering wasn't a verb. I never saw anybody get stretchered off the ice. And then it seemed like in 2000, it was like every other night somebody's career was being ended because they were being blindsided by somebody else. You know, and like, there was plenty of guys in the league doing fight, and that wasn't stopping anybody. But it was like, man, these guys are just so protected right now that they think they're impervious to pain. And like you said, like, I played with a mask for a while before I realized, like, man, it doesn't matter how quick I think I am. There's deflections and sticks out here, and I don't have the type of cash that I can pay for a full set of teeth now.
Yeah.
<You know?
laughs>
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's all interesting, and I think it's one of those things. I look at those lists that people make, and I think, like, man, those lists are really hard. Like, I've been thinking about a list for the Hockey Fights and Brawls page about, like, most underrated, and I think, like, man, that's super hard, because then, like, you know, you got a guy like Randy Holt that is really well known in his era, but gets absolutely no attention after a certain time. And I was like, well, what does he make? Does he make that list? Or, you know, I think it's hard, you know, or is there Mark Rippon on that list because he only played for a while? Or I'm sorry, not Mark, Rick Rippon, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I was like, man, I love Rick Rippon. I thought he was one of probably the last guys that I absolutely loved watching fight, you know, and he's just a fantastic fighter, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's all fascinating. I think it's all, you know, fanatic and fandom, and hockey itself is so hard to separate by eras, you know, because of roster size, real changes, all that stuff. When I watch the game now, I look at it, and I don't watch much of it, but I think, like, man, the game has never looked faster. And it's like, but it's almost too fast. Like, they can't quite catch up. They're not making the plays, you know. And I think, like, there's probably – hockey players have probably never been in better condition. They've probably never been more skilled. You know, they're probably at an elite level. But it's just like they're just kind of – it seems sometimes like they're these overcoached robots, and it doesn't have much kind of like room for improvisation or because everybody's about the same. Like, you don't have that like, somebody got stuck out on the ice. You know, Gretzky's out on the ice again, snaps or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's probably like every sport. You can pretty much say it's probably overcoached now, right? Because it's like there's too much money. Well, yeah, I thought too much. Money. I don't begrudge these guys making their money, but it's just like there's so much money involved. You can't afford just like, we'll go out there and wing it, boys. You know, we'll play some pond hockey tonight. Like, you know, we're not Glenn Sather in the 80s with the Oilers. Like,
what do you guys want to do?
Yeah, like, no. Like, this guy, he's no. Like, that's the same with coaches, right? I mean, they got to put food on the table, too. So they're going to be – so these guys are really – yeah, like you said, I think the best thing with these players, it's like everything's so cookie cutter. It's like they're – I mean, you'll get your Crosbys and your McDavids, of course. But, I mean, for the most part, that second line, third line guys, those six forwards there – they're pretty much interchangeable, like, in my opinion. Like, there isn't much of a difference. And they're all in great shape. They can all skate. They can all do this. I mean,
yeah, they're all going to get you 7 goals and 8 assists and 13 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
I look at these guys, and they're going to be 6'5 and 220. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I think the biggest difference is those third and fourth liners that are that third pairing, the fifth and sixth D, whereas, like, those guys would have been maybe a little bit less on talent, but, man, they hacked their way out of Foam Lake, and they weren't going back. And you put those Gary Harts out there, and you put those guys out there, and what they lacked in skill, they made up for in emotion, and they brought this other element to the game that just doesn't seem like it's there now. And again, you go back to, like, man, these guys have all been in development camps together. Some of them been in college together. They're with each other, you know, they're trading girlfriends, they're sending Instagram photos, whatever, you know. And at the end of the day, they're like, really, Darren and I are going to punch it out. Like, I make $2 million a year. How about if I just look to the refs and say, like, do something about what he's doing?
Yeah.
You know, when I see the game now and you see somebody get hit, you know, I saw Larkin get hit, and that really wasn't that bad of a hit. But you look around and these guys are all, like, pleading to the refs. You know, 20 years ago, there would have been some guy, well, Carlin did. He came flying in and corked the wrong guy.
But that's exactly what would have happened 20 years ago, too. Yeah.
But you look at him, and he's got the lineage, because whatever locker room he was in, I mean, that guy's been around probably, what, 13, 15 years? I mean, if I recognize his name, whatever locker room he was in as a kid, there was a guy in that locker room that wasn't looking around for the referee. He flew right to that point of contact, and he jumped in. He said, we'll suss this out later if I got the wrong guy, but you guys are going to know you're not knocking my captain down, you know, not without a callback, not without some other clapback. So, yeah, I thought that was funny. Went after the wrong dude, but it is what it is in today's NHL. And he got 6 games for it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of stuff, too, that would have been, like, in the 80s and 90s, and 70s, 80s, like, they were giving out misconducts and game misconducts like candy. And I think that's why you get, like, some of these guys get, you know, double game misconduct, you know, and they're like, oh, man, you got 40 minutes in penalties last night.
Well, that was, like, the other night, well, a couple weeks back, Florida and whoever, they're like, the ref gets on there, he gives every guy on the ice a 10-minute misconduct. And of course, everybody's going on, oh, yeah, what a huge brawl, and I've never heard of that before. I'm like, there was one fight. I'm like, that's embarrassing is what that was. Like,
no, there were 60 minutes in penalties. Like, really? And then you watch, you're like, what, for this scrum? Okay, all right.
But yeah, like it's like I wouldn't have given half those guys a penalty. I would have just told them to get off the ice. You know, it's like, but everybody's just like, oh, it was awesome. And I'm like, what is awesome about watching 10 guys get 10-minute misconducts? It's like, this is boring as shit, you know.
Right, pay $90 to slap the glass when these guys are all hugging each other.
Yeah, like I don't get it. Yeah. But well, I know we're going all over the place here. I wanted to go back and just touch on something that you had mentioned.
Sure.
Well, it's something that I have found. Like, obviously, I haven't done that. I need to get on this hockey. I need to get on this newspapers.com. I need to get down that rabbit hole. But
It's a brand new way to piss away a lot of time. Yeah. I'll tell you that. It's not hard at all. Everyone opens a new door, and you're like, whoa, off someplace else.
Exactly. So it's like, but I have Yuka, I know you're listening out in Finland. He sends me, like, especially if I'm going to interview a guy, he'll go through the newspaper. Cool. He'll look up stuff, and every once in a while, Well, it's been cool because especially the minor league guys, right? And he'll throw out you read something from the Knoxville Gazette, and I bring it up to the guy on the air, and he's like, "How the hell do you know about that?" And it's like, you know, because this is like from 1989 or something, right? And it's like, well, newspapers.com. But what I was going to say,
hyper regional game for years, it's hyper regional, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, right? And I was going to say, to go back to the Howe thing. When we're talking about, and we're, you know, the greatest hockey legend guy here talking about all this stuff, and I had talked to Steve about this very article here, and I was kind of mentioning 22 fights, and if you read this, and he said the same thing. Well, yeah, but it's interesting, he said, when, whatever example we'll use, when the Flamin fight. Okay, so you go and you read the Detroit paper. Oh, well, Gordy beat the fuck out of him, right? But then you read the Toronto paper. Yeah. Oh, Fern manhandled him, right? It's like, well, okay. So, like you said, it's like anything in life, right? It's like the truth is probably somewhere in the middle, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Even if you go back, well, I went back and on the newspaper and I did the research. Well, you did, but it's like...
You did part of the research.
Right? Yeah, and it's like all you... And like you said, all you can rely on, you're relying on the guy that rode on the train back to Detroit with Gordy.
Right.
You know, so it's like, description.
He's writing like, oh, Flamin kicked Gordy's ass up and down the ice. You think he's going to get a quote from Gordy the next game?
Exactly.
But, you know, there's not a lot of those. There's not a lot of those.
Like, well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, did you find... Like, if you looked at both papers, did they somewhat match? Like, because Steve was kind of saying they pretty much matched up pretty good in terms of the description.
They really do. They really do. I mean, there's some different phrasing. I got into it with somebody a couple weeks ago that was talking about, like, well, Barclay Plager beat him up. And I said, no, he didn't, you know. And then I said, like, this is what happened. And they said, well, he helped him up. I said, no, you can look at different newspaper references, and they all say that he let Gordy up. I said, but you didn't help him up. And I said, and there's a difference between letting somebody up and helping somebody up. I said, but you can definitely see in the dispatch that, like, yeah, they tussled, and Barclay Plager, for whatever reason, let Gordy Howe up. And in one paper, Barclay Plager fires off a couple shots. In the other paper, Gordy Howe fires off they both fire off shots, but Gordy Howe's shots stop Plager, and he decides he doesn't want anymore. So, You know, I mean, yeah, like you said, and you do it enough and you look and you're like, all right, so the crux is, like, this was a fight. And, you know, there's no instant replay. Like, the guys who are watching it have to go off what they're seeing. And I'm thinking about, like, games that I saw. And you know, I think you got to factor in, like, some of it's just an unreliable narrator. Like, there's the human element. And, you know, I think sometimes about, like, when I'm watching, I think it's the famous one is like Probert fighting Dave Manson, and he's, oh, and Mickey just loses it. Oh, he knocked him down, you know, and then you watch in the replay, it's like, oh, he actually never touched him. You know, like Manson lost his footing. But then you don't have that replay. And then all of a sudden, you know, like, well, remember, I saw Probert just knock Dave Manson out. Like, yeah? You know what I mean? Like, so some of these guys, they're going off these things, and they're up in gondolas. I mean, they got good perches. But it's not like they can go back and watch the film. It's not like the television, we're going to replay it at 11. You know, the game will be replayed at 11. We were watching the famous, the Avs versus the Red Wings, March 27, 1996. And we're watching that at the bar. By the time the game's over, like, they're starting to replay it at 10. We're all staying there again. Woo! You know, like, we're watching it again. But there was nothing like that. So, no, I haven't found a whole lot of glaring, what I would call homerism. You know, I always think it's funny when people give Turk shit about his Boston home. Cause I'm like, who do you think's cutting checks for this dude? You think he's going to be talking about, like, oh, that was a fair fight?
Yeah.
Or the bunch, like, no, man, he's a homer. Like, they're all homers. A big whistle. All those guys are homers. Like, because they're riding on that gravy train, you know? I don't see too many glaring instances. I was talking to Nick Marr about one that I had seen recently. It didn't have to do with Gordie Howe, but it was about Battleship Kelly. And in the Atlanta paper, he's fighting Pat Quinn. And in the Atlanta paper, they give it to Pat Quinn. And then in the Pittsburgh paper, of course, it's Kelly's victory. And so you don't see this too often, but this is pretty glaring. And, you know, these guys also wrote these things. They were under the impression that at best, it ends up on microfiche in some nerd's library. But there's no way there's going to be some nerd 50 years later like me geeking out at 1 in the morning reading it on a personal computer. You know, they're writing this shit, and they're not expecting anybody's going to verify anything or they're going to look into anything. Like, it's done. It's written, and it's off into the ether after that, you know?
Yeah, so, well, and they're writing it for Pittsburgh's fans. I'm the Pittsburgh reporter. That's who's going to be reading it, the people of Pittsburgh.
You got it.
So it's not like like somebody out in Detroit's going to start yelling, oh, right. Shit, I was there. They won't even know it existed, right? So
right. Well, I happen to subscribe to the Pittsburgh Gazette. That's not what happened.
Exactly,
it's not
right?
Happening like that.
Yeah. No. So the hometown fans read it. Oh, yeah, see, our guy kicked his ass. Battleship
absolutely.
Anchors away, right? Like,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So then for the rest of that guy's life, all of a sudden, he gets on the fried chicken message board of the hockeyfights.com. Yeah, the one night Battleship Kelly. Oh, he beat the shit of Pat Quinn. Yeah. Well, how do you know? I know because my dad told me, you know, or whatever. Well,
exactly.
Dad read it in the paper on the way to work, right? You know, so it's like, well, did he? I guess, you know, according to that writer, he did. But funny, we talked to the guy down in Atlanta. You know, it's just like, so.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
you take it all for you take it all with a grain of salt, and you just and again you're like, this is what you have that's available. It's there is no absolute truth. You just got to take a look at it and kind of make up your own mind and piece it together with what's available out there.
And I think you just have to be, you know, at this point when you go back that far, I think with Gordy or a lot of those guys, you know, up till about the 80s, I guess. It's like, you know, it's you just sort of take for granted or just take that it happened and this is, you know, and they fought and we'll leave it at that. I mean, you know, and it's funny, even when you talk to the fan, like, you know, guys do their top tens and do their lists. And I had a guy a while ago. I can't remember the top 10. I can't remember what I did. I did a top 10 or something, whatever. And he's like, I can't believe you don't have Gassoff in there. And I was like, well, and he goes, do you know how tough Bob Gassoff was? And I'm like, I don't. I've read.
I really wish I did.
Yeah. I said, what is there? Literally, three videos of him? Like, I said,
I know.
But I said to him, I'm looking at your profile. I said, you're younger than I am. So how do you know Bob Gassoff was so great, right? Well, exactly.
Dad,
his dad told, but I also know you live in Swift Current. So where were you seeing Bob Gassoff fight? Oh, well, my dad back in the day went to Medicine Hat Tiger games and he saw Gassoff fighting Junior. Okay, well, that doesn't translate.
Before he even got there.
Well, and I'm like, I saw a million fights in Saskatoon going to Junior games in the 90s. I can tell you what I think I saw. But I'm sure if I went back and saw the game tape or actually saw the fight, I'd be like, wow, man, you know, Wade Belak didn't beat that guy as mad as I thought he did back in the day, right? But it's
totally,
like, so I'm like, it's really hard. Like,
I just looked at some ticket stubs this week. I just found some ticket stubs, and I found one from the Wings versus the Oilers in 87. And I went back and looked at it, and there's a game like Kosher and Messier sort of get into it, but then there's Kosher and McClellan fight, and McClellan's head gets bloodied when they hit the ice. But when we were in the crowd, we all thought Kosher, and we wanted, and that's the other thing, like, we wanted to believe that Kosher did it, so it was easy to believe that he did, you know? But I went back, and I was looking at these ticket stubs, and I was like, man, I don't remember, anything about this game.
No, exactly.
I'm supposed to be like, oh, I remember that. I mean, you totally, he did this, and this. Like, man, I don't remember what I,
I've brought this up a couple times. It always cracked me up, like, going back to the old fight message boards, the fried chicken days. You'd have these guys, describe blow for blow a fight they saw in 74 at MSG. And I always noticed, though, their guys seem to win all the time in their recollections as well. Like, Fatio, he grabbed me through two rights, then he switched up and threw a left-handed hook. And it's like, really? Like, you know, meanwhile, somebody else is looking up and it's like, what game? I can't even find that fight in the box score. Like, what are you talking about? You know, and it's just like, well, because there was no, back, especially, well, back in the fright, like in 2000, there was no newspapers.com, but if you went to the library maybe and looked it up, but I mean, no one was really doing that. So it's like, well, everybody just took, this guy's a respected poster. He wouldn't lie. Well, it's not about lying, but it's more just. Because, like you said,
fallibility and like what we want to see. And we're more inclined to believe these things.
Well, I said,
like, I love Wendell Clark, but I see people on the boards like, he had, 97 knockouts. Like, come on. Somebody's knockouts. Like, you guys are pretty generous with the TKO calls.
Well, I was giving Chris the other day shit for that. He was talking about when Clark dropped Neely. I'm like, well, Neely's got his gloves still on. I'm like, I mean, I guess he did. But it's like, I don't know if I'd be.
Oh, I love that.
I don't
My
know if I'd be.
Quick. Your guy was a jumper. My guy, he's just quick. Your guy's a jumper.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if I'd be trumpeting that as a TKO, but I'm like, all right, whatever.
I love those pictures where a guy's landing a punch and the other guy's glove is just at his wrist or just dangling or something. Like, really? We're going to call this a fight? Like, it is what it is. But I'm like, pretend like, man, he dropped him. Like, well, he got a free shot.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, you could put up a fight video and you'll get 10 different calls. And it's like, the video's right here. Like, are you not
watching? I know.
Like, these guys will just. I'm watching this video and it's like, all right, I have no idea. Like, it's amazing to me what people see. And it's like,
see what you want to see.
Oh, it's it's a study into the human psyche. It's like, it's literally, it's like a social experiment. It's like, I'm going to put this up and if you're from Philly, the Flyer guy won. And it's like, or if you're from Boston, and it's like, wow, and it's
I mean, I think like 9 out of 10 of my posts or 9.9, if my posts on hockey fights, all I'm saying is like, Stephen Darren fought December 14th, 2024, at the Spectrum, and that's it. And then it just goes off from there. I remember that fight. Steve dropped Darren. Like, you're an idiot. Darren had his head over his shoulder over, whatever. Like, it goes off. Like, what do you get?
Steve wasn't tied down and he jumped him, So that, so it's like, all right, it's just, it's amazing. And it's,
I think is super cool about this is, and to kind of go back to, is like, like a guy like Steve Ream is just kind of in the vanguard. Like, there just isn't any. There's. What is that guy's name? He's like a hockey historian, like Paul Pacatou or something like that. I see him on some of these pages, and he just looks like he's the guy that everybody goes to as, like, he's the hockey fight, guru. And he's older than you and I. He has access to players. And I posted a picture of Dick Duff getting pushed into a penalty box. Like, that's Harry Howell. I asked him one time, and he said, I know, I pushed him in. But, and, in my mind, I'm like, cool story, bro. But how the hell do I know if that happened or not?
Well, I was going to say when we were talking about the how thing, I mean, somebody back on one of the fight sites actually sat down with Fern Flamin and talked to him And Flamin's kind of like just basically put the mouth to Howe. He's like, oh, fuck that guy. You know, like, I always beat him every time. You know what I mean?
There's a quote that he's like, man, we went at it tooth and nail, but we never fought, you know? And he's like, I wanted him to fight, but he wouldn't fight me. You know, yeah. And I was like, man, it says on this thing that you guys fought three times, but
yeah.
It probably wasn't what Flamin wanted, which was a wide open exchange, you know, yeah. And I could see that, you know, but that's the fallibility. Cause in our page we talked about earlier, they're fighting three times, but there's a quote that he says, man, no, we didn't fight. And you know, and I'm sure they did. I believe that they did fight, but they were just so inconsequential in Flamin's mind. And yeah. You know, it's so far after the fact that he was like, man, it just didn't register. It wasn't like fighting Richard. The other thing too is like these guys, for the most part, they kind of were squaring up and throwing punches at each other. There wasn't a whole lot of grabbing on. And, you know, they'd hit the ice. But, I mean, for the most part, that was like they were kind of – my understanding is that so many of these guys coming up through school in Canada, like boxing was a part of kind of gym, what we call gym class here. And that was like these guys like Andy Baskett, Red Kelly. You know, Red Kelly, you're like, man, Red Kelly. You look at his pictures. This guy's throwing haymakers, and he's fighting everybody. And, like, Red Kelly was a boxer, you know, but in the NHL he's getting – you know, he's a Lady Bing winner.
Well,
it all could throw down, and
I'm glad you brought that up, because yeah, what Steve was talking about here in this article, and it's true, because I actually had talked to my dad about this and stuff. It was like, yeah, one of the key education things here in Canada, especially with the males, was like in phys ed, cadets at community centers and stuff like that, there was a real focus on self-defense training. Because and boxing was part of the athletic program in a lot of schools and in high schools and boys clubs, like the Y and all that stuff. Those were big back in the day, right? So a lot of a lot of young men, teenagers and stuff, boxed. Now I'm not saying they all got in the ring and went to try it out for the gold gloves, but in phys ed, you learned to jab and defense and throw punches.
Exactly.
And then a lot of these guys, of course, go on to play hockey. Well, yeah, they might not have been in air quotes, you know, pugilists or fighters, but they had thrown punches and boxed and had some frame of reference anyway.
How
to throw a punch properly.
Right, they're tucking their chins and they're throwing. Yeah, exactly. And you read about it and you see like the Richard brothers, like they'll talk about it like that. Like, man, we grew up in gym class. Like it wasn't like these guys were. You got a guy like Randy Holt, and he'll tell you, like, yeah, he took boxing class. He was also a street fighter, but that's the rarity. It's like it wasn't like most of these guys were coming out. A lot of them had a little crossover, but most of them just had the background of, like, hey, we learned how to do this in gym class or in phys ed or whatever it was. And, again, back then, like, almost all of them fought at least once or twice a year just to show that they would. Some of them fought more. Some of them, you know, probably didn't have to. But at least once or twice a year, almost everybody's dropping the gloves just to say, like, hey, there's a limit to how much shit I'm going to take out here. You know?
Yeah, well.
And, you know, there's people spot picking all over the place. Like, I'm looking at John Ferguson's fight card. I'm like, I don't even know who the hell half these guys are. Alex Faulkner, and I'm looking at, like, oh, he's 5'8", 170 pounds. You know, and then I'm reading about, like, Ferguson going after Mike Corrigan, which I think is funny because there's a picture of, like, Larry Robinson, like, ragdolling Mike Corrigan. What the hell was wrong with Mike Corrigan in the 70s? Poor dude playing for the Kings. But, like, in this clip, in these newspaper clips, Ferguson's getting razzed from, I think it's a Canuck bench at the time, saying, like, why aren't you messing with Rosie? Why don't you want to go with Paymont, you know? And Fergie's saying, like, who the hell has he ever fought? And then goes up and beats up Corrigan, you know, like, and Robinson, when he's fighting, who's he fighting? He fought Corrigan, but there's some other guy, you know, and he's talking to the newspaper. He's like, I was just frustrated, so I took it out on him. Like, if Robinson's the ultimate badass, he's going to seek out the other ultimate badass. Instead, he found, like, you know, some other poor fourth-line punter, Greg Polis or whoever the hell it was.
Yeah, Tracy Pratt, you're getting it tonight, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sorry for you, buddy.
Yeah. Well, like you said, right, and that goes back to what we were talking about before. It was an appointment fighting back then. It was like, I'm pissed off now. I'm grabbing this guy, and I'm going to make an example out of you.
Exactly.
And because these guys weren't thinking 40 years down the line, oh, boy, a couple of idiots on a podcast are going to say I was a spot picker.
Totally. Right. You know, and I think there's also, like, it's fascinating when television gets introduced, because, like, players will say, like, man, you used to get your ass kicked on the regular, and it'd be like, no big deal. But now you're like, man, I don't want this being broadcast back to Timmins or wherever the hell it's going. My whole, everybody's in the bar, and my dad's sitting there watching it, like, oh, good show, Steve. Way to go.
Well, you know, as you mentioned that, you know what's so funny? I had Wade Brookbank on this show, and Wade Brookbank said that. He goes, you want to know what my biggest motivator was when I was fighting? All my friends can watch YouTube, and it's forever on, and it's forever, my fights are forever on YouTube, right? Because he goes, he's part of that next thing where everything you do is televised. So all of Wade Brookbank's fights in the NHL are on YouTube. So he goes, I didn't ever want to get my ass kicked because the boys would be texting me. But before I even got back into the locker room, my phone would be blowing up.
No kidding.
You know, because they're going to bust your balls, right?
I'm reading about Paul Hogan fighting Dave Langevin, and they're Minnesota boys. And he's laughing after the game. He's like, I told Dave our dads are back over in St. Paul at a bar right now watching. And I'm thinking, like, you know what? They probably were. They probably were back then. Yeah. Like, it just wasn't. I remember I went to Winnipeg and was visiting friends there one time, and this was in the early 90s. And the guy said, oh, you're from Detroit? And I said, yeah. And he said, we got highlights. And I was like, what the hell? Like, they had a satellite dish, and they were beaming in Detroit, you know, in Winnipeg. And he was talking about, like, he was using one of the Detroit newscasters, like, catchphrases, you know? And I was like, man, this whole, I love to think about, like, those early days of, like, I don't know how far back you go, or if you were even a taper of, like, man, we were taping stuff off the television, and then we were getting a VCR.
Oh, yeah.
Like renting a VCR to put that on top and taping that off of there. And, you know, I talked a little bit to Vince Carroll, Vin Diggity, because he and I are buds, and he's just been doing this for years. And he's a kid that was living out in Arizona. And his dad, I think he's an East Coast kid originally, but then his dad, when they move out to Arizona, I was like, man, I miss the Bruins game. We're getting a satellite dish. So Vince has been taping games for years, you know, and I got the same games everybody else does because I could only just get Channel 9 or whatever the Wings were. I don't think I've got anything unique, but it was still just a different time, and it wasn't something that was, like, readily available. You know, I think about, like, hockey voting for awards, and, like, so you're telling me, like, the writers in Winnipeg are watching the guys on the East Coast, or the writers in Winnipeg are watching the guys on the East Coast, but you know that the writers in Boston aren't watching the guys in Winnipeg.
No.
They don't care about it.
Well, that's the amazing thing. Like, even in the 80s and 90s, like, when we talk about, because, I mean, we're fight guys, right? So with our fight tapes and everything else, there's shit all for Winnipeg and Vancouver footage.
Yeah.
There was nothing because I can remember when I grew up here in Western Canada. I mean, the only we didn't have a dish. The only thing we got was Hockey Night in Canada. And this was in the 80s. So in the early there was two games. Well, three games. Yep. You'd get the Canadians on the French Channel. Then you'd get the Leafs. The early game was Toronto, and then the late game was the Oilers because it was the 80s Oilers with Gretzky. So they were always going to be on. So if the Oilers played Vancouver as part of the Smythe, you saw them then, or in Winnipeg because of Gretzky, Hourchuck, that whatever. But I mean, it wasn't Hockey Night in Canada, Winnipeg versus Vancouver. No, that wasn't that wasn't happening. It was Edmonton or Battle of Alberta. And of course, back then, less teams, so they're going to schedule it. Oh, who's our marquee game Saturday night on Hockey Night in Canada? Well, it's going to be Calgary Edmonton.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember watching Vancouver very much. The only time, what we ever did was when, you know, we visited my grandma in Vancouver. Then we saw the Canucks.
Yeah.
So all you had to hope for back then for the tape traders, or it's like you just hope there was a guy in Vancouver. Well, I know Tony was out there. I mean, you just hope that there was someone recording Canucks stuff. Or in Winnipeg getting the Jets, because other than that, no one's seeing this stuff. You know,
right. It was such a, like we said, we keep going. It was like so hyper regional. And I remember, you know, getting my first fight tape and having it not be just Detroit or Hockey Night in Canada and being like, holy cow, like there's people out there that are just have access to different stuff. And, you know, first year I lived in North Dakota, I didn't know this, but they were, you know, they got like some Minnesota sports station. So I watched all of that, the year that the Stars made their run to the, you know, their miracle run to the Cup Finals. But really, I'm watching Basil and Shane McRae, or Shane Cherlow, and, you know, I was a Basil fan from the Battle of Quebec because I liked Quebec, and I was bummed out when the Wings traded him. But I'm like, man, these two are, like, I wouldn't have had near the appreciation for Chainsaw if I hadn't got to see him almost every night in Minnesota, you know? Yeah. Like, I would have known, like, oh man, that guy can scrap, because he was one of the first guys on one of those fight tapes, you know, him fighting McGuire.
Yeah.
You know, but then later on, I'm like, man, both these guys, and McCray's become a guy that you can put out there on a regular shift. So, and that was like, well, I thought I was in hog heaven, because I'm like, man, I know my guys back in Detroit are taping Wings games. Like, I'm getting this stuff, and I'm getting the, you know, the Minnesota Sports Network or whatever. And
yeah,
ESPN used to have a game on, and it'd be like the weirdest time and the weirdest hours, and it'd pop up on Saturday. USA Network used to have a game, but it'd be like, you'd literally have to like trip across these things. Like, it wouldn't be something that you would know. It would just be like, oh, I guess it's on. You know?
Well, and the thing that always used to get us mad, especially here, like in Saskatoon, which is really bizarre, is for Kate. We had Detroit cable, so
wow.
So we would get the Detroit Tigers baseball games.
Yeah,
we'd get all their home games, because growing up, when I was like 10 years old, like Lance Parrish was like my favorite guy. I love Lance Parrish.
Awesome.
Well, the roar of '84, man. Right. So
that's my team, man. Those are my team.
Yeah, I had a Tigers hat and everything. They were my team, because
right,
I was
on.
I was 9 years old. Roar of '84, yeah. Lou and Kirk Gibson and Trammell and shit. Daryl Evans,
great.
Like, yeah. But
I love it.
But come the winter, they didn't have Red Wings games on.
No,
so we never saw Probert and Coe, which pissed.
Oh,
we all wanted
man.
To see. Well, I mean, Hockey Night Canada, when they played Toronto, then you would see. Well, more Coaster early on for us, because of course he was a Saskatoon Blade, so we knew we knew him from going on. I didn't know who Probert was, because he was an OHL guy, and again, no internet
he
back then.
He wasn't making any waves. He wasn't like he didn't come with any heralded rep out of juniors as being some like massive destroyer of men. Like he had a couple of high profile fights with Baumgartner in the Memorial Cup finals and it wasn't like he was laying people out left and right. You know, nobody knew what we were getting with him, really, when he came into camp. Robert Probert.
Yeah. How do you do that to your kid, man? Robert Probert.
I know.
That's a rough handle.
Just you're a letter away from being Probert.
Yeah. You know, especially if your handwriting's bad, you know. Yeah.
Totally, right.
You know, so we didn't really see Probert. Well, at that time, too, when he first came, I was like 11, 12 years old. So it was more like into that grade 7, grade 8, grade 9, into high school. Kind of that late 80, early 1990, well, all of a sudden it's like you start, because we'd get high like news, sports channel, you know, at 11 o'clock. And again, you saw the Clark Probert fights. And again, Owen Wendell from Saskatoon here. It's like, holy shit, this guy kind of like manhandled our guy Wendell, you know? And it's like, so you start reading about this. And you start reading about this Bob Probert in Detroit. Like, this guy's the baddest dude, right? So then it's like, okay, well, I got to start getting some fight tapes or something of this guy. So I always tell this, of course, the first fight tape I ever got was the Bruise Brothers, Probert and Koser, right?
Yeah.
So, and then it was like, holy shit, right? It was like I mean, I knew who Koser was, but it was like, you know, again, but it wasn't like we were seeing all his NHL stuff.
Right.
Again,
right,
if it was on Hockey Night in Canada, you did, like, whatever, but it was like, other than that, not really. And they'd show some fights on the news every once in a while, but it was like two or three punches. It wasn't like they were showing the whole thing. You know,
rough night at the Joe or whatever, and you'd get a 6-second clip or whatever. Right?
Sure. Very seldom did they put up the whole thing. So it was like, okay, you got a taste of it. It wasn't until I really started. Like, well, ended up finding a friend of a cousin or whatever, started like, oh, here, you should check these out. And they were like actual fight tapes. And you start putting those in, and they were 2 hours of like everybody, right? So it was like, holy shit, now I'm actually seeing like McSorley out in L.A. and Koser and Probert.
Right.
And then you start getting older stuff then. You start making trades, and it's like, I'm hearing, who's this Glenn Cochran, right? And it's like, you know, and then, and then you start getting some guy. Thankfully, somebody back then, you know, got the 70s, got all that Bruins stuff, you know, and the Flyers stuff.
The New England Sports Network.
And
you know, and I think you and I are similar, I think, in that, like, I was a steady hockey card collector. So some of these guys, like, you know, all I know about Jimmy Mann is what I see on the 1980 penalty minute leaders. Like, some of these guys I never see except for being on the penalty minute leader card. So I'm like, I don't even know who some of these guys are, you know,
yep.
And to see him in real life. And I remember oh man, I don't remember what guy, maybe it's Terry Murray or whoever it was, like Jack McElhargy comes up and they're like, man, where did these guys, where is Philly getting these guys from? Like, where are they going these guys from? You know, and back then, like, those guys would more or less like play the role. They looked the role, man. That was all part of like the theater of the event was like, man, they're looking like badasses. Like, they're looking like they're smoking menthols in the locker room.
Well, yeah, like, and it's so funny, like, you, like, all of those old junior cards, and like, you put up the Saskatoon Blades card of Dave Brown. Well, he looks like he's 28, you know, and it's like, but now you put up the Saskatoon Blades cards, these kids look like they're 14, you know.
I know, man, it's wild.
Yeah, but yeah. I was going to say, yeah, with the, no, I completely blanked out of what was I going to say?
Hockey cards or...
Yeah, it was something with footage. Well, it was just like you said, yeah, it was like you didn't see any... Well, the only time you ever kind of really got, like you said, with the hockey cards, looking at those, or at the end of the year, you got the Hockey News annual. And they had all the stats from the minors and the NHL, all the final stats. You read through it, and it's like, you know, Kevin Evans, 648 penalty. Who is this person?
You'd look at that, and you'd be like, how the hell do you even do that? How is that even possible?
Like, the minor league stuff was actually even the more bizarre to me, because now these guys are putting up 500 minutes, and it's like, where is Muskegon? You know, I don't know what that is.
Totally. Yeah. And then I'm a Michigan kid, and now I'm like, man, these guys will go to war. Like, Michigan. And like Muskegon versus Port Huron, you know, in a home and away series, and like, man, I had no idea of like what kind of wars those were at that level, at that tier, you know, on Friday and Saturday nights with these guys riding the bus, Kevin Kerr with these guys riding the bus for years and just going to war. I loved looking and like I loved in those annuals or whatever it was. You'd be like, Paul Higgins, 19 games, like 120 minutes, you know, like he wouldn't even play enough that you actually know who he was. You're like, what the hell? How did that happen? You're like, and Paul Higgins has got to have like the highest games to bench clearing brawl ratio of anybody that ever played.
Well, it was funny. Yeah. Cause he was on a list that I did the other day with the lead or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know who that is. Like, I'm like, I've heard the name, I didn't know the myth. Not the myth, but the stories behind it.
Yeah, there's so much.
My buddy Nape sent me this thing, and he's like, oh, yeah, he's like this teenager, and he's sending me, like, news clips of, like, this guy was just, like, insane, right? And just...
Absolutely. And he was, like, one of those last guys. And here's the thing, Darren, like, think about, like, how many of those guys populate the minor leagues. Like, how many of those guys didn't quite make it to the show or to the National League, but they're out there doing that at that minor league level. You get a guy like Daniel Shank. You remember him? He was, a wing for a couple of years. And you're like, how does he get 257 minutes? You know, and then he's getting 400 minutes in San Diego in the IHL or whatever. Like, it's just, like, crazy to think about. And you watch that stuff, and you're like, oh, yeah, that couldn't exist today. Like, there's no way that you could have that sport exist like that today, where people would accept that. Like, it's too far removed from those kind of bench-clearing brawl days where you could poleaxe somebody or whatever it was. It's not in the fabric of the game so much anymore, so that when it does happen, like you said, with whatever ridiculousness list that was last week, I think Ottawa and Florida, like, oh, my God, he handed out 60 minutes in penalties. Like, yeah, for about 10 minutes of actual penalties.
Oh, yeah, like I always say, when I go to work, and we got a couple 19, 20-year-old young guys working. Oh, and they just think, like, this was just like, oh, it's just mayhem. And I'm like, are you serious? Life. Like, oh, yeah. It's like, come on, you guys. Like, so I'll show them some stuff on YouTube, and, like, their jaws hit the table. Like, they can't wrap their minds around not only guys fighting like that, but just, like, the amount of fights. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy had, like, 30 fights 1 year. And they're just looking at you like 30 fights, one guy? And it's like, you know? And it was just and they just can't wrap their heads around it. And like you said, that's just the NHL guys, let alone, I mean, you want to go into the minors and you know, I'll bring up some 05 LNAH stuff if you want. That'll really blow your minds if you want to see show you Patrick Côté and Joel Therrio, you know? Yeah. But it's like, you know, you want to Tasker Sen, you think that was crazy, you know? Like, you know, show him some Mel Engelstad footage and shit. It's like,
I love Mel. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know nothing about that. Like, I never weigh in on any of that stuff because, like, for better or for worse, where I was in Detroit, I was pulling Channel 9 out of Windsor. I was pulling Channel 34 out of Montreal, and I was getting the Detroit stuff, but I just didn't, minor league hockey wasn't on my radar. I would go watch the Spits in Windsor, but that was in my mind, that was different. Like, I didn't think it was better than anything else. It was just different. Like, there just wasn't minor league hockey like that around. And, you know, when I was a kid, my dad, he loved hockey. So that's how I got into it. And he would take me down. Like, like a lot of kids, I felt baseball was my first love. I loved baseball, and the Tigers were good. And so that dovetailed easily. Well, when the Tigers got good, it got harder to go see games. Pistons move out to wherever the hell, Pontiac, and I got the Wings downtown, and nobody wants to go downtown in Detroit in 1980. But my dad is, he's not put out by that at all. And we'd go down the night of the game, and we'd get tickets, you know, we'd buy wherever it was the tickets were for, and we'd go down and on the glass. And I'm watching Joe Patterson, and I'm watching Motor City Smitty, and they were so bad, Darren.
Yeah.
So bad. Barry Melrose, like, I got Barry, like, I knew Barry Melrose as, like, yeah, he's the Wings enforcer. Like, oh, no, Jim Korn or Willie Huber, who makes UA Krupp look like Gladiator, you know, like, oh, man. They were just bad. And I tell people all the time, like, yeah, when Eisenman got drafted, that was a big deal. But you got to understand, it was Probert and Kosher just as much, if not more, that was putting butts in the seat. Like, Ilitch was giving out a car a night, you know. And we would go down there. I talked to my friend about it all the time. Like, we would go down there, and we'd each have our own row. And I remember one time I was sitting there, I was talking to my friend. We looked down, and the guy had rolled down from us. On his program, he had a bag of weed out and was rolling a joint. And this is like a Red Wing game. You know, like 1983 or whatever. But it was like one of those things, like, yeah, nobody's going, man. It's downtown Detroit. People are scared, and the Wings suck. And you go, the best time to go would be when the Leafs would roll in, or a Canadian team, because the place would fill up, and, like, Leafs fans would come because they couldn't get into the cathedral. So they, you know, come to Detroit. And it would be rowdy right from the get-go, you know, when the national anthem would be amped up. And it'd be, like, it would be a big deal. It was fun. But those were some lean years, and it was Probert and Kosher just as much as Eisenman that started putting butts back in the seat, you know, and Demers. I was looking at fights, and I was like, man, I wonder how many Probert fights I saw. And on the tickets that I could find, not many. And I was like, oh, I saw him fight Lee Norwood, and I'm watching that like, yeah, I don't remember anything about that. That's a total snooze fest. Like, that's not in the memory at all. Like, two guys wrestling for 15 seconds. So that's my big, I saw Probert live.
I was going to say, on all your, did you ever run into Probert? Like, personally, you ever have a conversation with him?
No, I had a friend. No, I felt like there were times, especially in the late 80s, 88, 89, I felt like I wasn't hunting him, but I felt like we weren't far behind each other, because there was only so many places, and he was such a larger-than-life presence. And I may have said this to you before, I did have a friend that used an ATM machine, and his card was in there, and he, like, however it worked, he got a hold of, like, I think at the time, you know, nobody's got phones or anything, I think he somehow got a hold of somebody at the Joe, and they went down there, and of course, it ended up being, like, one of those stories that nobody, none of us knew at the time was happening all the time, but, like, Probert was awesome to him, you know, just treated him like he was the greatest in the world, and, you know, like, hey, gave him stick, you know, gave him a ticket to the show, like, to the game, and, like, you know, just treated him like he was the best dude in the world, and we already loved him, so it wasn't I had a teacher who in high school who was a Border Patrol guy, and we talked about the incident when he got pulled over, and he said the deal was, like, and he didn't pretend to be close enough to touch it, he said, but the deal was, like, this would happen enough, like, Probert would come back from Detroit, going into Windsor, wasted and enough that this one night, this guy was like, no, not happening, not tonight. You know, he said, but he had such a larger than life presence. I don't ever remember hearing anything about Joe Kosher. Well, I do, nothing particularly good, but I don't remember, like, Probert was like the life of the party wherever he went, you know, and like, people loved having that dude show up. So, I mean, I think that's the way it was all the way to the very end.
Yeah. Yeah, from all accounts.
Amazing. People are like, oh, I can't believe he died. He died so young. It's like, I can't believe he lived that long.
Yeah.
Really, truly, you can't believe he died? Like, okay. I mean,
well, like, they
he
even
had
brought
a
it
massive
up in,
appetite for life. You know?
Yeah, I mean, well, they even brought it up in that documentary, right? Like, imagine all the all the things you did hear about him. Well, now imagine all the things you didn't hear about him. That they covered up.
Exactly.
You know, there are a lot of motorcycle and car accidents and everything else. And, you know, that's why I would say that's the crazy thing about.
There's so much stuff like that you look at now. Like, you look at how, why'd Scott Stevens leave Washington? And then you look at how that went down and you're like, oh man, there's this limo with an underage kid in it. And you're like, man, I didn't hear anything about that. Well, that never left Maryland in 1980. That's not, you know, that's not making it to Detroit in the news. And, like, there were things like that that happened. You know, you look at, like, Dougie Gilmore and his wardrobe malfunction.
Yeah.
You know, like, that guy, good luck. Good luck. You've been run out of the league today, you know, their attraction to babysitters, whatever it is. Like, it's not happening these days. So.
Well, yeah, like, even back when we were growing up, it was like with the junior team here, it was just like, like with the junior kid, like you're talking teenagers now, of course they're going to get drunk and get into street fights and, you know, whatever. So you'd always hear about, especially you go back in the days, like Twist and all them and Coaster were like bouncers in the summer at this bar, Ezzy's here. And like, they were beating the shit out of guys, right? And like, Fakota was just crazy in Saskatoon driving all over the place. And yeah, like, but you didn't hear about the stuff. Like, this is like 1980, early 80s, right? So it's like, they're not going to run these guys down, right? Because it's like, oh, he's going to Red Wings camp in the winter, in the fall here. So,
we'll tell you what, just get out of here.
You go home,
whatever, you know. Yeah, nobody, right, whoever's getting stomped out outside the bar doesn't have five friends recording it and is going to go to the, you know, the whoever the next day. You just took your ass whipping and went home. became a story for you to tell to other people.
Yeah, well, that's why I always say, like we just said, right? That's the crazy thing. Imagine all the stories you heard about Link Gates. I said, imagine all the stories you didn't hear.
Yeah,
like that's the crazy thing, right? It's just these guys
totally
live.
If that's what made out exactly. I always tell people that, like, I wouldn't want to be. I'm so glad that I kind of grew up when I did, because so much of my stupidity existed prior to the internet.
Absolutely.
I'm like, oh man, I want that stuff saved forever out there. Like, I did enough dumb stuff. I don't need it to live forever. So I kind of forgot that we were having a show. I was just talking to you.
Yeah, well, here we are, folks. We've been recording. You're in the Steve and Darren conversation, started with Gordy and ended with Detroit Cable, and you know, we're all over the place.
Right, everything in between.
Yeah.
Man, I love it though. I appreciate it. And you know, I didn't come on here like hunting for bear. I just came on here thinking, like, you know, I think if people look into Gordy and really look at it, like, you'll see, like, man, this guy's legit. He was a legitimate tough guy. Was he the baddest guy ever? No, but he was legitimately tough. And like somebody like Gillies, or as much as I hate, like, Lindros, somebody like that, like, if you stepped to him and you didn't know what you were doing, you could get hurt. And that was legit. So,
no, and I mean, I dig it, man. I appreciate it, because, like I said, I've been very vocal on here about the myth of Howe. And it's like, you know, and it's like, no, and you're right. And I appreciate, you know, getting kind of called on the carpet about it. It's like, well, yeah, but, you know, and then it's like, and I know you and the other Steve, I'll just call him when Probert was king, you know, have done real deep dive research. I mean, like I said, I've read a few newspapers. I've had guys send me stuff, and I've read stuff and different accounts of things. But yeah, like, you, I know you guys have been really deep into it, and I'm certainly, this is not going to be the last time. In fact, I want to get both you guys on at the same time.
That would be fun.
Oh yeah, and I think we can. You and I will talk off air here, but I think there's that underrated thing I'm interested in. But I also want to talk to you about just some of the things that you've discovered through your investigating on .com.
I'd love to. It has been a ton of fun. It has been so much fun, and it's just brought out like so much stuff. And you're like, I think there's just so much. There's such a wealth of knowledge out there and resources.
Yes.
And you know, we all still miss. I know we miss Drop Your Gloves, and I feel like I think when Probert is king, I think he's getting something like that going. He's
trying.
And I'm hoping that a bunch of us can plug into that again and start to put some of this stuff out there, because when I was a young kid, I loved to read, you know, Battleship Rules. Like, the stuff that guy would write was like, man, it was really well written. And it wasn't like he punched him in the face three times and he punched him in the face three times. You know, it was like like the context, man. I like to know what's going on. And like you said, what's the backstory here? And how did this originate? Because none of it just happened in a vacuum, you know?
That's the real sad thing. I've said before, when the fight message boards went away, Fried Chicken and HockeyFights.com and Drop Your Gloves.
Yeah.
That is decades worth of history that is gone.
True.
So the only thing that's left now are these Facebook groups, and you have YouTube and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of things, there's a lot of myth getting thrown around, and just what I heard.
Yeah.
And then, when you start like you said, guys like yourself and when Probert was king and Nick Mara and older guys. And yeah. like, and I try to dig up some stuff and we try to, I would say, try to educate the people, right? Like, and bring,
yeah,
and
that's all you can do is just kind of point them to the stuff that exists out there and let them make up their own minds from that. But yeah.
I mean, yeah. And, yeah, that, sure. and that's what I try to do with this with these shows. I try to get people on to educate people. And then, and I love it too, because I've never sat here on this show and ever, listen to me, I know everything. Oh, no, I don't. I've got plenty of blind spots. So the fact for you to come on and talk about the Gordy stuff, this is great. This is why I do the show. This is exactly why I do this podcast. It's for this reason
I love it.
Yes.
I love it. Me too. And I go into this, like, I'm not a professor, you know, I'm looking at this like, man, there's so much for me to learn out there. And I went into this, like I said, I'm an unabashed Gordie Howe fan. I love him. I think like there's enough truth that underpins the mythology. I mean, he's just such a great guy. But I went into this wondering, like, what's the reality with this? And finding out, like, man, there's some interesting stuff in this. And there, you know, I think we're just starting to really see the tip of the iceberg in terms of like what this research and newspapers can do and how we can use that to support anecdotes. And you know, the best is if there's video, but you know, we'll go with what we got and hopefully people will make their own opinion, or if they don't, they'll just keep their mouth shut about the stuff they're wrong about.
we can always hope, right? But yeah,
that hasn't happened yet in any form. So we'll
see.
But, Darren, thank you. I appreciate it, and I was really I'm really thankful for the opportunity. It was great.
Well, definitely do it again, Steve. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?